My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate. It's to teach. It's to inform. It's to put it into context. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Okay, everyone's focused on the Fed right now, and with good reason. I mean, they just gave us that quarter point rate cut that we wanted so badly, right? And that gave the, let's say, gave a nice boost to the averages. And Dow was up 115 points. S&P was up 0.33%. NASDAQ up 0.33%. Interesting synergy there, huh? But as important as the Federal Reserve might be, can we just say that it's not the only thing that matters? There are a lot of constraints on companies these days that have nothing to do with the Fed. And after hearing from Apple and Facebook after the bell, can you imagine these two huge companies tonight? You know what? It's head scratching. I mean, they're up, but not enough. So I think we got to devote more attention to a couple things in particular that I've never really talked about on this show. We need to spend more time talking about the lack of time to consume all there is out there. And we need to spend more time talking about the government, meaning the newfound menace of government when it comes to classic digitized now big business. While Facebook and Apple both reported strong numbers, I think their stocks should have been up much more than they are in after hours. I mean, they're good, but I expected great. You know what? I'm sensing some skepticism here. Skepticism creeping in about both of them. And I suspect some of it has to do with the twin constraints of time and government. So we're going to define these. What do I mean by them? All right, let's start with time. This one's simple. There are only so many hours in a day. Lately, it feels like we're constantly hearing about new television or entertainment or sports packages that you can stream over the internet for $5 to $15 a month. Each of these services offers thousands of hours of programming. Netflix, HBO, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Apple TV+, Disney+, Peacock, CBS, All Access, Showtime, Starz, Cinemax, you name it. I mean, then you got the Electronic Arts and the Activision, the Take-Two, and you can play them on systems made by Sony or Microsoft, Nintendo. You can sign up for the NFL Sunday Ticket. Watch all the football you need. You can sit on your couch and scroll through your Instagram feed while ordering delivery from nearby restaurants, including Wingstop, which we have one tonight. And you can get the same-day delivery or next-day delivery from Amazon unless you prefer to buy online and pick up in the store at Costco or Walmart. But you know what we don't have? We don't have enough hours in a day to enjoy all the stuff that I just talked about. Not enough time, even if you quit your job and learn how to go without sleep, the latter of which I've got down cold. We also don't have a one-stop shop where everything's at your fingertips, which brings us to the second, more powerful limitation, the government. The regulators don't want any of these companies to create a one-stop shop because then they'd be too powerful. When it comes to FANG, my acronym for Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google now, often, time and government are far more important to their future earning streams than the Fed or the trade war with China. They are. But I don't think most investors realize how critical these two factors have become. Yes, and China does matter. Apple had some great China numbers, by the way. And the Fed does matter in terms of trying to figure out how much we should pay for stocks. But listen to this. On a day when Apple and Facebook both reported really terrific numbers, I'm now wondering if these two companies are so powerful that the good news can actually become sort of weird bad news. Has success been so politicized in this country to the point where they're afraid of crowing? Where they're muted? Apple's service revenue stream just gets better and better. If they wanted to, they could just buy the rights to the NFL. If they could buy the NFL! After all, Apple could afford it. They could afford anything. And it would bring in tens of millions of viewers if they bought the NFL Sunday ticket. It would be perfect for the streaming service. But I suspect they won't go that way because, you know, in some ways, they've gotten too big. They don't want to give the government more of an excuse to crack down. Plus, Apple CEO Tim Cook pretty much assured me tonight when I spoke to him that they will grow content themselves. They don't want to be a catalog. That's fine. But you know what? I long for the old days when I preferred world domination via acquisition. Or at least I did until politics reared its ugly head, or her head to be ecumenical. Facebook. They're trying to develop a cryptocurrency. I don't know. It seemed good to me. It's kind of a novel idea. but they faced enormous resistance from Congress. As I was watching the House turn Mark Zuckerberg into a pinata not long ago, all I could think of was, well, what happens if Facebook wants to get into payments? And will they be allowed to? Are they going to come down hard on that? What if they want to support certain merchants? Will they be regarded as playing favorites? Anything they do now is subject to scrutiny. Heck, Twitter just stopped taking political ads because they couldn't handle the pressure. Too much hassle. Well, isn't that the new normal? These days, you need to care about this stuff. In the old days, before we had trillion-dollar companies, before we had superpowered devices that you have to pry from our cold, dead hands, before antitrust enforcement started making our nature comeback, I really only cared about the numbers. How fast was this company growing? How much money was it earning? What were we willing to pay for these earnings? Here's who I was! That was me! Sure, you had to factor in the unemployment rate and wages. You had to fret about inflation. You had to worry about the Fed. Still do. Although right now the Federal Reserve's playing ball. Fed Chief Jay Powell did exactly what he needed to do today, making calm statements at his press conference where he explained why we needed a quarter point hike, mostly because of a potential for worldwide slowdown. Potential, by the way, coupled with a sense that things aren't too crazy here in the U.S. Hey, that created a benign backdrop, which allowed a whole host of stocks to rally, especially the cloud plays, because they thrive in a slowing economy. And they really took off today. They finally turned around. Still, in the old days, you rarely needed to worry about regulation, at least not since Reagan was sworn in 38 years ago. You didn't need to consider that the consumer might not have enough hours in a day to consume all the content that the media companies were producing. But these days, these constraints have become real, and content is very expensive to produce. Thank you, Barry Diller, this morning's Squawk Box. Hey, by the way, new set. We need to start recognizing that there's simply not enough time for people to enjoy all the diversions on offer. From a stock-picking perspective, that means you need to be more circumspect about these companies that require the consumer's attention. In other words, there's just too much darn competition. We've already seen it happen in the food delivery space, where Grubhub's being eaten alive by Postmates, DoorDash, Uber Eats. I think the streaming video space may just get too difficult. With so many new services launching over the next few months, maybe that's the real casualty here. The problem is there are only a handful of companies that offer you a genuinely great user experience at an incredible price. And in some ways, those companies have become too successful for their own good. And those companies are Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Alphabet. They've become so big and so powerful that the regulators and many in Congress want to put a stop to their expansion. They certainly won't be allowed to keep consolidating. Now, it might be more convenient for us if Facebook owned Twitter and Snap and Shopify, but that's textbook anti-competitive behavior, and the regulators now will never allow it. It might be make it easier viewing experience if Apple owned the rights to the NCAA, the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball. Again, that ain't going to happen. Maybe it would make sense for Alphabet to acquire Walmart in order to teach Amazon a lesson. Maybe it makes sense for Amazon to take over FedEx so we can get next-day delivery anywhere on Earth. But the regulators will never allow that. And that's probably a good thing, by the way, I know. They wouldn't buy Walmart, but they would buy Target. Now, we keep buying the cloud kings, and that works. Stocks like Salesforce, Workday, ServiceNow, on fire there, Salesforce. But you know what? They've gotten so big that they're bumping up against each other. And the government's not going to let Adobe or Salesforce roll them up. The bottom line, starting tonight, with these two big stellar earnings reports that should have generated gigantic moves in stocks, we need to recognize that for many of the largest companies in this market, companies I love, time and government antitrust enforcement are going to matter a whole lot more than the Fed going forward. You need to factor in the clock and learn to separate the things that give you more minutes from the things that devour your time. And you need to understand that the bigger Facebook and Amazon and Apple and Alphabet get, the more pushback they'll get from Washington. Fact of life. Get used to it. Cullen in New York. Cullen.
Jim, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Virgin Galactic, symbol SPCE. The stock has taken a big hit since going public earlier this week.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, here's the way I feel about Virgin Galactic. I mean, when I come to terms with the situation, I say, well, you know what? I'm not really into it. It's a novelty. It's kind of like, it's something new and different. It belongs like maybe like, you know, in your closet. Bill in New Hampshire, Bill.
Jim, thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I love your show.
Thank you.
My question deals with waste management. I've had it for over 18 years. It's done extremely well, as you can imagine. Last week was a disaster. Some days it was down $3. Right. I'm at a loss as to the reason for it. And I was wondering if anyone would know, it would be the legend. So can you help me out?
Yeah, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to tell you to buy it. I have a friend, Bill Detweiler from New Hampshire. This is probably not the same Bill. I don't detect the same accent. I think Waste Management had a really good quarter. And I think the people are just down on the stock for no particular reason. Fish is good. That's not the protein that you get, like when you go to Milos, that's the name of the CEO. And I think that Waste Management is plain and simple something that I thought I should be buying for the Chapel Trust, and I'm going to put it on the list tomorrow and do the work, even more work than I have. Bill, you got a winner. I'm not kidding. Waste Management's come down too much. All right, now look. I think Facebook's up big, but it should be bigger. I think Apple's up big, but not enough. And now I'm starting to worry about these unseen existential crises things like time and government. Because otherwise, I think these stocks would be much higher. Yes, they all look good. Hey, how about Mad Money tonight? Wingstop, which is not, by the way, worried about any trust, it stocks down nearly 16% over the past 3 months. Does the company need more than a wing and a prayer? Or is now the perfect time to take a bite? I'm going to talk to the CEO. Then, is it time to pump up the volume on Spotify, which would be an example of something that should be bought by one of these great companies, but would be shut down by antitrust? And it's an under-the-radar housing play that offers a read on the overall sector and also makes it so I don't have to do my deck one more time. I'm talking about Trax. Don't miss my exclusive for the CEO. And I may suggest that you stick with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com. For their stock to fly high, this company needs to give you wings. Whether saddling up for a big game or testing their tolerance for Buffalo-style heat, can consumers make Wingstop a stock to sink your teeth into?
The worst thing about earnings season is it doesn't always make sense. Sometimes the market's just plain wrong about a quarter. And watching that play out could be incredibly frustrating. Just look at the stock of Wingstop. This morning, the beer and chicken wings chain reported what I consider a serious contender for the best third quarter in the entire restaurant space. That space is challenged. Listen to what Wingstop did. They posted a 3-cent earnings beat off 17-cent basis with higher than expected revenue. And most importantly, their same store sales were mind blowing, up 11.9% year over year. Even better, management raised their full year forecast. And what happens? Well, the stock actually got hit this morning for holding rebounding a tiny bit, closed up 1.5%. Yet Wingstop, well, let me just say, it shot the lights out. I got to tell you, this reaction is incredibly dispiriting. Wingstop's been pummeled for the past couple of months. It's part of a broader rotation out of growth stocks and into value names. Normally, when a stock sells off going into earnings and then the numbers are much better than expected, that's a recipe for a huge rally. Yet, for some reason, Wingstop's in the Rodney Dangerfield mode. It can't get no respect. I think the market's making a mistake here. Don't take it from me. Let's dig deeper with Charlie Morrison, the chairman and CEO of Wingstop. Find out more about the quarter and his company's prospects. Mr. Morrison, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be here, Jim. How are you?
Well, Charlie, I got to tell you, I'm confused. You had by far the best number. I mean, there wasn't anyone even close. And yet, maybe Chipotle, maybe not. But all the owners of Wingstops are making incredible money with a small format, which is incredible. It's in itself. Tell me what's going on in the industry that people believe that the best times are behind them, including for Wingstop.
Well, I don't believe the best times are behind us at all. We've had a great track record of consistent positive same-store sales growth. This year will culminate in our 16th consecutive year of positive same-store sales growth. Great unit development, on pace for another 10% plus delivery in terms of new unit growth for the brand. We have all the right sales drivers in place, including increasing our national advertising, the advent of digital, now at 36% of our total business mix, and a growing delivery business that now comprises 80% of our restaurants. So We have a bright future ahead of us, a lot of runway for growth, not only here in the U.S., but across the world.
I wanted to ask you about across the world, because I think your formula is uniquely, transcends borders. I've seen it with with KFC. I think Wingstop offers a better value, frankly. How aggressive can you be overseas, knowing that at the same time it is far away and you want it to go right in terms of quality?
Well, I think we have a lot of potential. In fact, probably as big as the opportunity we have here in the U.S. alone. Chicken is the most consumed protein in the world. Bone-in chicken, just like chicken wings, is a favorite and a fan favorite everywhere in the world. Our unique flavors, the ability to have variety for everyone, makes our brand very portable. And I think you see that in our performance so far. Roughly 140 restaurants just so far, but we're already emerging as one of the top casual dining plays in Mexico. That franchisee just signed a new development agreement to more than double their penetration to up to 200 restaurants in Mexico alone. We just opened up in London, our second location. Great results in both of those so far, very early in the process. We have a long way to go.
All right, Charlie, I was on the Grubhub conference call yesterday. It's kind of dispiriting, frankly, because the company seems to have hit a wall, so to speak. And it's a venture capital wall. It's not a wall by their own making. It seems to me that their pain is Wingstop's gain. Am I reading it wrong?
Well, I think we've done a lot of research in the space over the past few years as we got ready to implement delivery this year into our business. We took a very methodical approach. One thing we like about our partnership with DoorDash is that they're focused on the merchant, us, our franchisees, making sure that they're delivering a great logistics solution that's profitable not only for our franchisees, but for them as well. We recently just renegotiated our contract with them. We're getting ready to start advertising delivery next year. We're very bullish on the opportunity and the upside that our committed partnership with DoorDash has to play for the future.
I'm trying to figure out how they make money because, you know, frankly, if it's free to the customer, that's an unbelievable deal. Why would, you know, I know I'm supposed to ask them, but they're private. Why would anyone agree to that kind of deal? It's particularly because they're sharing all the information about the customer with you, so you've got all the digital stuff you need.
Well, I mean, they make money, certainly, and they make money three different ways. They do charge a fee for delivery, which all the pizza players have done for years, as we know. They also have a small commission that we pay to them for the facilitation of the service, which offsets the labor that we would otherwise have to invest in the business. The last piece is a tip on the transaction that's paid by the customer to the driver. If you combine the three of those together, DoorDash can make money off a brand, especially like Wingstop. We have a higher average check, a lot of takeout business already. Delivery is a perfect fit. And I think if you maximize that that equation, everybody's going to win.
Were you surprised about the notion of the promiscuous consumer that they talked about in the Grubhub shareholder letter?
Yeah, we wouldn't refer to them that way. We call them loyal consumers, people who want to make sure that they're enjoying a quality occasion. And that's why we picked DoorDash as our player. They have the best solution for a quality occasion that matches up with exactly what Wingstop consumers are expecting out of us. So it's a win-win in the relationship for us.
National advertising, something that I know the franchisees absolutely love. Are you getting, when you see national advertising, more door knocks, more companies saying, you know, more guys saying, listen, I own 18 McDonald's. I want 18 Wingstops. Will you let me do that? Is that what national advertising also does besides bringing in the doors?
Definitely. In markets that are emerging, that are growing for us, that haven't been penetrated beyond 25 or 30% of their potential, we are seeing that kind of sentiment from both our existing franchisees who want to continue to grow, and they make up 80% of the development of the brand each and every year. But we also have a lot of attractive new prospects that are coming in the door saying just what you said. Let me take an opportunity to expand this great brand, and we're winning with them.
Well, one last question, Charlie. I know the market may not appreciate all the great things you're doing, but you have been very good to shareholders. You're never afraid to pay a special dividend, return a lot of capital. Stock down here. Don't you feel like rewarding them a little more?
Well, we're going to continue to reward them. You know, since our IPO in 2015, our total shareholder return has approached 400%. That's the inclusion of just the growth in the business plus those special dividends and return of capital to shareholders. We're going to continue that strategy well into the future.
Well, Charlie, you're a money machine and the customers love what you're doing. I think the delivery is so unbelievably good. I want to thank you for everything you've done for shareholders. It's always great to see you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it very much.
Guys, this is a one of a kind, all right? Charlie Morrison just keeps delivering and delivering. They have a lot of cash. They have a lot of things they can do for you to reward you. this stock is right to buy in an environment where I know that Yum was not. And money's back after the break. We talked at the top of the show about the ideas that consume your time. Well, how do you know when one of those ideas has the right place at the right time to buy the stock? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about the top of the show, and I'm thinking about Spotify. I don't know if you know Spotify, but it's the world's largest music streaming service with a stock that came public a little more than a year and a half ago. After initially roaring right out of the gate, the stock rolled over at the end of last year, along with everything else, and it never really recovered from that meltdown. It was almost as if its time had not yet come. But when it opened, everyone was so darn excited, including me. On Monday, though, at last, Spotify reported a fantastic quarter, and its stock surged nearly $20, or 16%, in a single day. Maybe some vindication for me? So is Spotify an idea whose time has come? Maybe, but as someone who started recommending this thing pretty much the moment it came public, well, let me just tell you, I've been burned every single time that I have said it's the right thing to buy. Every time I thought we had a sustainable rally and I was wrong. Every time it gained momentum, it swiftly lost that momentum. Even when the company reported what I thought were good numbers in the past, Wall Street would always find something to nitpick about, and then the stock would get hit. But you know what? This time was different. There was nothing to nitpick with this quarter, and it feels like the market's finally giving Spotify the credit it deserves. But will the newfound love for this stock last? I know when I spoke with them on Monday, I sensed that maybe it's for real this time, but I've been wrong. But let me tell you why I think there'll be more upside. First, you need to understand that Spotify is a terrific concept. They give away their huge library of music content if you're willing to listen to ads. But you know what? You can pay up for an ad-free experience, and there's a great migration that comes from the advertising people to the ad-free. The company's got 248 million monthly active users, which includes 113 million paying subscribers. That's a unique club, the 100 million plus club. It's growing like a weed and has totally transformed the music industry. However, for most of its existence as a publicly traded company, Spotify struggled to find its groove. They've now reported 7 quarters since the public listing in April of 2018, and while management's delivered some impressive numbers, 5 outright revenue beats and just 2 very small misses, even positive earnings reports have failed to become positive catalysts for the stock, as you can tell from this incredible depiction, until 2 days ago. All right, what was Spotify's problem? Why did people not like it? Well, there are a couple of issues we can go over. For one thing, it's never been crystal clear exactly which metrics investors should care about the most. Remember at the top of the show, I talked about time and I talked about government. What if those are metrics that we're trying to factor in? What were the factors that you needed to know here? Was it total monthly average users? Was it paid subscribers? Was it revenue? See, there was no consensus on Wall Street. So whenever Spotify reported an upside surprise with some hair on, there's always someone willing to argue that the negatives outweighed the positives. Second, Spotify's a European company, and it gets a huge chunk of its revenues from the United States, though. So you have these ridiculous currency fluctuations, and they often make it very difficult to interpret the numbers. For example, the last time they reported 3 months ago, the sales and earnings were fantastic, but the paid subscriber numbers came in weaker than expected. Some analysts upgraded the stock and raised the price targets, but others told you the paid subscriber forecast was all that mattered and downgraded the stock. Yeah, at the same time, we had upgrades and downgrades. Always a curious situation. So it ended up that, well, it got hit on the news. But then it rallied to its year-to-date highs a couple of days later. Pure confusion. Third and most important, Spotify's management is incredibly non-promotional. The team, led by the straight-shooting chairman and CEO, Daniel Ekhaz, developed a reputation for giving conservative guidance on their conference calls. Now, personally, this is one of the things I loved about Spotify. I prefer executives who practice the art of UPOD, under-promise and over-deliver. Two executives who overpromise and underdeliver really break our hearts. Unfortunately, there were times when the company would report stellar results, but then management's forecast sounded tepid. Investors gave up on the stock because of it. So I want to use a technical term about what happened on his conference call so you really understand. No mojo. Meanwhile, not everyone was confident in management's long-term strategy. At the beginning of the year, Spotify announced that it was making a major move into podcasting. I thought this was brilliant, too. This is another mistake I made. They acquired Gimlet Media for content and Anchor, a platform that helps people create podcasts. And look, I didn't cheer just because it happens to be in Brooklyn, about five blocks from me. This move was greeted with skepticism by others, and the Bears only got more ammo when Apple told us they were getting into the same business over the summer. Now, all along, I know I've been positive on Spotify, except during a moment of temporary weakness when the stock was hit by a savage rotation out of growth and into value. The bull thesis is simple. Spotify is a huge beneficiary from the rise of the subscription economy. These days, consumers don't really care about ownership anymore. They're happy to pay for a monthly subscription service that gives them access to a huge library of content at bargain basement price. Plus, Spotify's always had impressive numbers. It's been very frustrating to watch the stock flounder, even as they kept delivering solid results. Over the summer, though, investors started fretting that the company was experiencing a subscriber growth shortfall. In August, the company extended their free trial period from 1 month to 3 months, which made people worry that the streaming music space must be getting more competitive. So when Spotify reported that fabulous quarter on Monday, thank heavens. Well, they didn't just deliver better than expected numbers. They also put many of these concerns to bed. They finally delivered exactly what I thought that they were going to deliver, and then some. The company posted terrific better than expected sales, up 28% year over year. Remember, this is big numbers, people. They generated 54 million euro operating profit. Street was looking for 30 million euro loss. Spotify's monthly average users grew by 30% to 248 million. That's 5 million more than the analysts expected. That includes higher than anticipated premium subscribers at 113 million, up 31% year over year, and much higher than expected ad-supported users, up 29%. Even though management once again gave conservative guidance, at least at the time it was in line with Wall Street's expectations, they even raised their monthly average user forecast for the next quarter. There was very little to quibble about. When you drill down, it is clear that Spotify is firing all cylinders. There is no bear case that I can find now. Their international growth was tremendous. Their business in Latin America, wow, I couldn't believe how strong. Southeast Asia, I asked the CFO about it, accelerated dramatically. India outperforming management's forecast by 30%. Spotify's been fiddling with its platform to improve subscriber retention. These changes are clearly working. How about the podcast business? Wall Street's been so skeptical. Spotify pointed out they're seeing exponential growth in podcast hours streamed, up 39% versus last quarter. Last quarter! Management adds that, and I quote, for music listeners who do engage in podcasts, we are seeing increased engagement and increased conversion from ad-supported to premium, end quote. That's the holy grail. Then they continue, quote, some of the increases are extraordinary, almost too good to be true, end quote. Holy cow. Finally, Spotify gave us more color on their two-sided marketplace initiative. They want to give up-and-coming musicians tools to help connect with an audience and develop their careers. Isn't that great? This could be a huge source of revenue, too, down the line. Management told us they'll have more financial details the next time they report. No wonder the stock caught fire on the news. The numbers were almost universally better than expected. The much-doubted push into podcasts is paying off in a major way. People love podcasts. And we all know there's positive catalysts down the road, thanks to the two-sided marketplace initiative. So could this at last be the beginning of a longer-term rally for Spotify that I thought from the beginning but have been wrong about? It wouldn't be the first newly public company that took a long time to find its groove. Hey, by the way, we saw the same thing happen with two of my absolute favorites in 2016 and 17, Okta and Coupa. It took a little while. Oh, but once they caught fire, wow. And you know what? And the same thing goes for Facebook. Big swoon, then monster rally. But once they found their footing, they gave you spectacular long-term gains. Oh, by the way, Netflix had its troubles, too, before it took the bull by the horns. You know who was one of the architects of that company's strategy of matching your tastes with your films in a predictive artificial intelligence fashion? The retiring Spotify CFO, Barry McCarthy, whom I interviewed on Monday. Oh, he will most certainly be missed. And I always think of him when we use Spotify at our restaurants. And it mind reads what our collective customers want. The bottom line, I think Spotify will be just fine. I think it's terrific. Company just reported a game changer of a quarter. And after that rally, the stock's basically back to where it was when it came public in a direct listing last year. And you know what? I know this looks steep. You ain't seen nothing yet. Bill in Georgia. Bill.
Hello, this is Bill in Georgia. Jim, I watched Broken Bailey out for many years. I bought Roku and had a 20% gain approximately. Now, I held the stock and it dropped. Now I have a 6 to 7% loss. Should I hold or sell?
This is a wild one, Roku. When you every time you see a new system come out, a new David Faber with an unbelievable interview about Time Warner and their HBO on the go. What happens? People buy Roku, and so I have to tell you, sir, I don't think that one's done. I think that one can still go higher. All right, this could be the beginning of a long-term rally in Spotify. I'm serious. It may just. You know, I got it wrong again. I've said that five times. I like to say when I got it wrong because I like to also say when I got it right, like with Apple, like with Facebook. Okay, there's much more mad money ahead. Trex has been on fire. There's another one I've liked. A chair for so far this year. But its recent earnings miss, well, they gave you a red flag in their own conference call. I'm going to sit down with the CEO to find out what's on deck for the company going forward. Then, it's a group of stocks priced for total imperfection. I'm going to reveal what they are and what you should do with them. And of course, rapid fire. Yes, lightning round. So stay with Cramer. What the heck just happened to the stock of Trex? It's the world's largest manufacturer of wood alternative decking and railing products. Trex makes composites that look just like real wood but require a lot less maintenance. And until yesterday, it was one of the hottest stocks around, thanks to the rally in all things housing and housing-related. But when the company reported on Monday night, they disappointed Wall Street. While Trex delivered a 4-cent earnings beat off of a 68-cent basis, they had a revenue shortfall, and the guidance for next quarter was, I think, rather subdued. Management talked about 14% growth, down from 17% this past quarter. In response, the stock got hammered, plunged from 91 to 84. I don't know about this. I think Trex has been a terrific long-term performer, which is why I want to dig deeper to figure out what went wrong and if it will be fixed soon or if it isn't already. So let's check in with Jim Klein. He's the president and CEO of Trex. Get a better sense of the quarter and where his company's headed. Mr. Klein, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Great to see you.
Jim, from time to time, stocks had a hiccup. Every time it's had a hiccup, I said buy because the long-term thesis is in track. It's intact. Your product's better than wood. It's cheaper long-term in terms of maintenance. It's made of things that the millennials wanted to be made of. It cuts down on pollution. None of that's changed, right?
None of it's changed. The long-term opportunity is still there. We're still 95% recycled content. So the story is strong.
Okay, so in the conference call, you said commercial products, net sales from commercial products was below our expectations in part due to market conditions and in part to the uneven nature of that business. And that said to me, well, wait a second, maybe I'm too bullish.
Well, you got to remember that this is a very small portion of our product portfolio, only about 6 or 7%. It does not drive the earnings as the residential does. Residential is repair and remodeling, not new construction, 90%, 95% repair and remodeling.
Okay, talk to me about you had significant capacity investments, and how long do you expect that increased capacity can support Trex's long-term growth?
Well, the capacity we're putting on has started to come online, but most of it comes online in 2021, early 2021. Okay. So we're building that capacity for the future. We introduce new products. The demand for those new products is far stronger than what we'd anticipated.
Okay.
And we see a super opportunity for a long-term run with the stock.
Now, every time you've been on, you've been talking about the real competition is wood, but there are now some other players with some capital. And are they nipping at your heels, or is the business so big that we shouldn't worry about competitors to Trex?
Well, I do focus on wood. That is the largest opportunity. About 84% of the lineal feet sold is wood.
Right.
So focusing on a competitor is not really helpful in my mind.
Okay, that's important for me because I'm thinking margins were a little bit under pressure. Maybe that was because of price cutting, but it also just because you're expanding so fast that sometimes that happens.
Well, it does, and we had margin expansion for the second quarter. We see the fourth quarter as being another strong quarter for Trex, and we've guided 2020 as being a high-growth year for us, double-digit.
Now, I just had a nice interview with Jim Fitterling. He's the CEO of Dow, and he's just a terrific guy. And I approached the idea that, you know what, these younger money managers are different from you and me, Jim. They think plastic, and they say, you know what? I don't care if it's good. They're not going to buy it. When you meet younger managers, are there people who say, you know what? I want to buy this because this is the future.
Well, I think there's two things that the younger managers see. Number one, they like the recycled content that we have. That is a big plus. The other thing they see is millennials look for the same thing baby boomers look for. They don't want to maintain that deck. We offer that opportunity.
Now, when we talk about the recycled, I wasn't clear whether there was there cost pressure on recycled? It said at one point in the call, it seemed like that your costs were elevated to get the stuff that you used to recycle.
No, the recycled material has actually been a slow drift downwards.
Okay.
Either because of the Chinese getting out of the acquisition of plastics, letting it come into their country, but probably equally as important, we've been more selective in the type of plastics we buy.
Okay. Now, you every time you've come on, you've had new uses, new things, stadiums you've done. You've done planking all over the place. What's the new stuff for Trex? What are you thinking about now that people didn't think the Trex could be in?
Well, the opening price point product, it sells at $1.75 at major retailers. It is taking the category by storm. Our competition have introduced products similar to ours, but they're priced a little bit higher. And we think that's where a lot of the growth will come in the near term.
Now, how about the lower interest rates? Because we're finally seeing, I mean, there were mortgage purchase numbers just this morning that showed me that people should stop doubting what happens when rates come down. It's good for housing.
It's absolutely good for housing. People have a little bit more money in their pocket, so repair and remodeling comes top of mind to them.
And when they repair and remodel, I mean, for instance, I've got a deck that I switched to Trex. How many of these people are coming in and saying, you know what, it's worth the investment? Because Carol Tomei used to be the CFO of Home Depot. She always told me, listen, there's expense and there's invest. And that as soon as you think your house is going to go up in value, you're not expensing, you're investing. Are people investing in their home with Trex?
We're seeing more and more of that, in particular at the opening price point level and the mid price point level.
Okay.
They like to be able to get into that ultra low maintenance and not have to worry about replacing that wooden deck in 10 years.
Now, also, I'm trying to figure out whether when I see a stadium, should I presume now that what looks like wood is Trex?
Not in the stadiums yet. There are a couple of stadiums that are putting up like beer gardens,
right,
and they are using Trex material for that.
Why haven't they used it? I mean, this is to me the most natural one. A stadium, I just don't understand. Trex is longer lasting. It's better than plastic. It looks fabulous. People care about this stuff.
They do, and it's easy to clean up. So it's a great play for industrial applications or, for example, the stadiums.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that a lot of times what's happened in this market is people are nitpicking. And to me, it sounds like the story is as great as ever. I've been behind it because I have to candidly, my two kids love the recycle aspect. I like the fact that I use the decking and it works. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. That's Jim Klein. He's president and CEO of Trex. I don't know if you have a house and you haven't used it. I don't know what you're doing. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! It's time for the lightning round! And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Skedaddy! Time for the lightning round! Let's start with Jeff in Ohio. Jeff!
A big Hocking Hills booyah to you, Jim.
Of course. What's up?
Cedar Fair.
Cedar Fair is up, and you know what? Six Flags is down.
Sell.
You got the right one, Sandusky, Ohio. How about Crystal in California? Crystal!
Hello, Mr. Kramer. My stop is Square SQ.
I think Square's too low. I am warming. I've been saying bye. Look, ever since Sarah Fryer left, it's done nothing. I think it's time to start thinking that maybe it should do something. Let's go to Dave in Virginia. Dave!
U.S. Treasury, booyah! MGM, Jimbo.
Hey, Gary in the U.S. bonds, booyah. I think that MGM just reported was looking at a pretty good quarter from what I can tell. I think that Jim Murin should do more in the sports betting world. Okay, let's go to Judy in Maryland. Judy!
Hello, Kramer. We love your show.
Aw, you're very kind.
What do you think of IDEX Labs Incorporated?
I like the humanization of pets. I think that it's the best way to play it. And I also want to extend good wishes to John Ayers, who I know is dealing with some medical issues. He stepped down. He's a great man. And, John, you know we think that you've done a remarkable job and you love pets just like us. Let's go to Janet in Texas. Janet!
Jim, this is Janet in Horseshoe Bay, Texas.
Okay.
And I'm calling about the number one 5G stock called Marvell Technology.
I You know, someone stopped me on the street the other day and said, Jim, give me two stocks. I said, well, I usually like to do that. I'm going to give you CVS, and I'm going to give you Marvell, because it's the number one play on 5G. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Look, I know Big Pharma is not exactly beloved by Wall Street right now, but tonight, right here, I'm going to say that at this point in the earnings season, that these stocks have become absurdly cheap versus the competition. So cheap that you got to buy them. Let's tick them off. First, how about Merck? This amazing company has a groundbreaking cancer immunotherapy drug called Keytruda. It did $3 billion in sales this quarter. You know, this is easily on track to be one of the biggest blockbusters in history. Maybe the biggest. Yet Merck stock, 16 times earnings. That's nuts. Pfizer just reported an upside surprise. Well, that doesn't happen often. I expected Pfizer actually to give you a shortfall now that its wonder drug, Lyrica, is off patent. But instead, they delivered. Yet somehow this stock trades at 14 times next year's earnings. And with a 3.8% yield? Are you kidding me? Biogen may have come up with a way to treat Alzheimer's. They can't stop it, but they might be able to slow it down. The analysts were all skeptical initially. Now, one by one, they're being converted. I think they'll ultimately all be believers. Why? Because Biogen resumed this work at the behest of the FDA. There's still more holds than buys on it, which sells for 9 times next year's earnings. I'm sorry, that's insane. This is a $54 billion company that could be worth double. Last night, Amgen reported a better-than-feared quarter. That didn't require management to cut their forecast. Amen! I'm calling that a win with these guys. Amgen's starting to win back major market share in the migraine business. Their key franchise, Aimovig, had been the market leader until Eli Lilly started making major inroads with the drug distributors and the drug stores. Amgen hasn't done such a good job. Last year, I was on the phone with McKesson for hours to order my Aimovig, and even though when I got it, they wouldn't even send it to where I wanted it to go. They were horrendous. Now, though, Amgen's getting the thing into the drugstores. On top of that, I think they're just scratching the surface with the psoriatic arthritis drug that they bought from Celgene, because Celgene had to sell it, according to the government, to merge with Bristol-Myers. Hey, speaking of Bristol-Myers, it had a superb quarter, too. I expect the Celgene deal will make them a fortune once it closes in December. I know the stock has spiked here, but it still has nearly 3% yield. It sells for just 12 times next year's earnings. I've been saying for 10 points now, buy Bristol-Myers, I reiterate. While AbbVie hasn't reported yet, I'm confident the numbers will be good. More importantly, AbbVie's acquisition of the undermanaged Allergan should be amazing. No, I'm not worried about Botox's challengers. I'm excited about its new migraine pill to deal with pounding pain. As a spokesperson for the American Migraine Foundation, I can tell you that the concept of acute care for migraine is a very big deal. There's nothing out there aside from standard painkillers, which I regard, frankly, as a joke played on sufferers like me. This drug could be huge. Novartis is under pressure because one of their subsidiaries got caught tampering with clinical trial data, although the drug almost certainly would have been approved anyway. I think the problem will soon be solved. 15 times next year's earnings. Bye. GlaxoSmithKline. CEO Emma Walmsley has moved heaven and earth to turn Glaxo into a more R&D-focused pharmaceutical company. It's working. She's clobbering the competition. Eli Lilly got hit over some glitch in diabetes drugs, but it's coming right back. AstraZeneca. Some are worried that their strength in their cancer franchise was chimerical. I think it's the real deal, although the stock has run too much at this point. I don't want you to chase it. Which brings us to the real anomaly, the one that is driving me crazy. Yes, of course, it's the elephant in the room. It's Johnson & Johnson. Now, the bears will tell you that J&J is no longer a drug company. It's really more like a law firm that happens to have a sideline in pharmaceuticals, medical devices. These days, the stock trades based on litigation. Last night, J&J revealed that they can't find any asbestos in the talc they recently recalled. They hired a third party to conduct massive numbers of tests, like the FDA did. Well, that allowed the stock to rally 2.9%, still tip of the iceberg. J&J's got opioid lawsuits. They got the original talc lawsuits. Could end up being very expensive. I think the stock will remain tough to own until we get some resolution here. That said, this too shall pass. I'm betting my Charitable Trust money that J&J comes out on the other side of this in good shape. But you can't own this unless you can take a lot of pain. At the end of the day, though, nearly all these drug stocks are just too cheap. They're trading as though Elizabeth Warren's going to win in a landslide next year with a large enough majority in Congress to establish price controls. They are priced for total imperfection. But what if she loses the general election? Or someone more moderate wins the primary? Or Warren takes the White House but lacks the votes in the Senate to pass single payer? Then the drug stocks can roar. At this point, even if she takes a big lead in the polls, these stocks, they've become too cheap to ignore. I say, buy one. Stick with Kramer. All right, we're worried about time and government because Apple was an amazing quarter. It should be up like 10 points. And Facebook was unbelievable. It should be up even more. I think people are starting to say, wait a second, we got to be a little more careful and circumspect about world domination in an election year. I wish I didn't have to think about this stuff, but it has become on my mind every time I see some big executive from Silicon Valley go to Washington. And I say to myself, are these companies too successful? This one, I sure hope isn't, because it's all done with ingenuity. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow!